Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Night Angel Trilogy, The Way of Shadows, Part 2. Created by Brent Weeks. Narrated by Dylan Lynch. With performances by David Coyne, Eric Messner, Ren Casey, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Azelford, Tim Getman, Elizabeth Jernigan, Richard Rowan, Colleen Delaney, Johan Detweiler, Tony Penny, Joe Brack, Casey Platt, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Laura Quinn Anderson, Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Scott McCormick, and Yasmin Toison. The Way of Shadows, Part 2. Kylo's afternoon had been frantic. He'd had to get Logan to get someone else to get him an invitation. And then, when he'd tried to find Durzo, the wet boy was gone, leaving a typically terse note.
On a job.
Durzo didn't often give Kylo a lot of details on his jobs, but lately, Kylo felt that he was being more and more excluded, as if Durzo were trying to create space between them so that it would be easier to kill Kylo when the time came. Durzo's absence had meant that Kylo didn't have to confess to talking with Aline, botching it, and probably tightening security at the Jodwin estate all at once. So it wasn't altogether a bad thing. Now, because he'd told Logan he was coming to the party, he had to come without a disguise. But because he'd told Aline he was coming, if she saw him, she'd report him immediately. That was why he'd come in a carriage, even though it would seem odd for a young noble alone not to ride. The carriage stopped at the gate, and he handed his invitation to Bert. The man didn't recognize him, of course. He just looked over the invitation carefully and waved him in. Kylo was glad to see the man. If he was still guarding the door, it meant that the Jodwins didn't have enough guards to replace all the ones who'd worked earlier in the day and still guard the party. Maybe they hadn't believed Aline. After all, how would a serving girl know about the plots of wet boys? Kylo took one step out of his carriage and froze. The carriage directly in front of his was open, and a whip-thin man was stepping out of it. It was Hugh Gibbett, all in chocolate leather and silks like a lord, long blonde hair combed and gleaming, smiling with the disdain of a man superior to those around him. Kylo ducked back into his carriage. He counted to 10, and then he stepped out of the carriage himself. He saw Hugh disappearing inside. Kylo followed, producing the invitation again for the guards in front of the monstrous white oak door.
So, have you gotten the old goat's permission?
Logan looked at his friend Prince Elaine on the other side of the long table heaped high with every delicacy the Jodwins thought would impress their guests. The table was near one of the walls of the vast great hall of white marble and white oak. Against the monochrome background, the nobles were a riot of color. Several of the realm's most influential hecatonarchs, priests of the hundred gods, mingled with their myriad-colored robes. Tara Grayson had shown up to the last big party 2 weeks ago in a scandalously low-cut red gown with a soaring hem. Tara was eighth in line for the throne, after the prince, the Gunder daughters, Logan, and her father, Duke Grayson, and she adored the attention her position gave her. Her daring had touched off a new fashion, so this week all the gowns were either red or dared to expose more leg or breast or both than most prostitutes did. This was fine for Tara Grayson, who was somehow able to look glamorous instead of cheap. Most women weren't so fortunate.
I spoke with the Count this morning.
Logan was suddenly silenced as breasts went past. No, not just breasts. The breasts. They were perfect. Not precipitously exposed, but perfectly shaped. These floated past him, held in a gossamer embrace of fabric, rejoicing to cling to such nubile curves. Logan didn't even see the woman's face. Then, as she walked past, the sweet curves of swaying hips and a flash of lean, muscular calves.
And?
The prince looked at Logan expectantly, holding a plate with little samples of every delicacy on the table.
What did he say?
Logan's face flamed.
Too much time in the wilds.
Except that wasn't really true. His eyes seemed unattached to his mind at all, controlled directly from elsewhere. He moved further down the line, trying to remember what he'd been saying.
He said, my favorite!
Logan started heaping strawberries on his plate, grabbed a bowl and filled it with chocolate fondue.
Somehow I'm sure whatever Count Drake said, it wasn't, my favorite. If he said no, you don't have to be embarrassed. Everyone knows Count Drake is a little off. Their family mixes with commoners.
He said yes.
Like I said, he's a little off. When are you going to propose?
Tomorrow. It'll be my birthday. Then no one can stop me.
Does Sarah know?
She suspects that I might do it soon, but she thinks that I need some time to consolidate my household and speak with my parents about it first.
Good.
What do you mean?
I wanted to give you a birthday present myself. I know you've got feelings for Sarah, and I respect that, but, Logan, you're a duke's son. Tomorrow you'll become one of the most powerful men in the realm, behind only the other dukes and my family. My father would love for you to marry Sarah, and we both know why. If you marry her, you'll set your family back from the throne for two generations.
Your Highness!
No, it's true. My father fears you, Logan. You are admired, respected, even held in awe here. That you've been gone half of every year hasn't alienated you like my father hoped. Instead, it's made you romantic. The hero of fighting for us on the borders, keeping the Caledorians at bay. The king fears you, but I don't, Logan. His spies look at you and they can't believe that you are what you appear to be. A scholar, a fighter, and a loyal friend of the prince. They're schemers, so they see schemes. I see a friend. There are those who would destroy your family, Logan, by any means, and they won't tell me what they're planning. But I won't allow it. In fact, I'll do all I can to stop it. I'm here tonight to do a favor for my father. In return, he promised to give me whatever I ask. Whatever I ask.
Well, that's some favor.
King Stupid gave my mother's favorite jewel to his mistress. I'm here to get it back. It doesn't matter. You know my sister?
Of course.
Janine was here somewhere. She was usually described as sunny, very pretty, and very 15.
She's smitten with you, Logan. She's been in love with you for 2 years. Talks about you all the time.
You're joking. I've barely exchanged 2 words with her.
So what? She's a great kid. She's pretty, only getting prettier. And she has my mother's intelligence. I know how important that is to you, my vituperative friend.
I'm not vituperative.
See? I don't even know if you are or not. I just grabbed the biggest word I know. But Jenny would.
What are you saying, Your Highness?
Jenny's your birthday present, Logan. If you want her, marry her. Just give me the word.
That's quite a birthday present.
Your family will be restored. Our children will grow up together. One of your grandchildren could share the throne with one of mine. You've been the best friend a man could ask for, Logan. And friends are something most princes don't get. I want to do well by you. You'll be happy, I promise it. Janine is turning into an amazing woman, as I think you've noticed.
Logan saw her then, looking at him across the room, and he realized he'd already seen her tonight. Or at least her breasts. His face flamed. He tried to summon words, but they abandoned him. Janine stood there across the room with the elegance of a woman far older, at least until one of her friends said something to her.
Say yes, and you can do all the things you were imagining a minute ago, legitimately.
I'm in love with Sarah, Your Highness. Thank you for your offer, but
Logan, do everyone a favor, say yes. Your parents will be overjoyed, your family will be saved, Janine will be ecstatic.
Oh, you didn't tell her, did you?
Of course not, but think about it. Sarah's great, but let's be honest. She's kind of pretty, but she's not as smart as you like. And you know what the rumors say about her getting around.
She is the opposite of a loose woman, Elaine. She hasn't even more than kissed me.
But the rumors...
The rumors are because people hate her father. I love her. I'm going to marry her.
Excuse me.
A young girl slid between them and brushed past the prince to reach for a sweet roll. She was a scandal in red. The friction between her chest and the prince's nearly pulled her breasts free of her dress, which had something more like a navel line than a neckline. The prince noticed, Logan saw. But then, he usually did. And so did Logan.
I'm Viridiana. I'm so sorry. Excuse me.
Not that it was an apology. Not that it was an accident. Viridiana slipped back into the crowd, her dancer's body carrying the prince's eyes and his thoughts away from Logan.
Think about it. Let's talk tomorrow before you ask.
The prince watched Viridiana head out to the back porch. She looked over her shoulder, and seeing him looking, smiled. The prince looked down at his plate, piled high with a little bit of each delicacy on the table. Then he looked at Logan's, piled high with just one thing.
This, my friend, is the difference between us. If you'll excuse me, I've seen a dish I simply must sample.
Oh.
Logan's eyes fell on Janine again, who was still looking at him. It looked like her friends were urging her to go talk to him.
Damnation. Where's Sarah?
There were guards on every stair. This wasn't good news. Kyler had made his way surreptitiously through the party, trying to look so ordinary that no one gave him a second glance. But it wasn't easy. Especially doing it while keeping an eye out for Hugh Gibbett, who, most likely, was doing the same thing. If you saw him, Kyler would lose the only advantage he had. He made his way onto the back porch. Normally, he would have avoided it because it was liberally strewn with couples. If one thing was guaranteed to make you feel lonely, it was seeing other people kissing passionately in an alcove in the moonlight. Now, though, Kyler was looking for a way to the second floor. A balcony hung just above the porch, and if he could figure out a route, he could climb to it quickly enough that no one would even notice. Of course, once he was upstairs, he'd still have to find the Kakari, but he bet it was in the Duchess's room. People like to keep their favorite jewels close. The wall had no trellises. Maybe he could jump off the rail and vault off the wall high enough to grab the edge of the balcony, a good 15 feet above. He could probably do it, but he'd have to get it on the first try. If he fell, no one would be able to ignore the noise he made when he crashed through the rose bushes below.
Still, it's better than standing here.
Kyler? Kyler, hello. What are you doing here?
Kyler turned guiltily.
Sarah! Hello!
Sarah looked like she'd spent all day getting ready for the night. Her dress was modestly cut, but classic, beautiful, and obviously far more expensive than anything Count Drake could afford.
Wow, Sarah, that dress!
Logan's mother gave it to me.
She came and stood beside him.
You know Logan is going to...
I know.
She put her hand on his. He turned, and they looked into each other's eyes.
I'm so confused, Kyler. I want to say yes to him. I think I love him. But I also...
He swept her into his arms roughly, throwing an arm around her back and a hand behind her neck. He pulled her to him and kissed her. A hand clapped on Kyler's shoulder, not gently.
What the hell are you doing?
Logan spun Kyler around.
Something I should have done a long time ago. You mind?
Kyler turned away from Logan as if to kiss Sarah again, but Logan hauled him back around. Kyler's fist came first and caught Logan on the jaw. Logan came in and fought as Kyler knew he would, honorably. His punches came in above the belt, textbook jabs and hooks. He was fast, far faster than he appeared, but fighting in such a rule-bound style, he might as well have been a cripple. Kyler staggered back as Logan came in, his weight on his toes crowding Kyler back against the railing. As Kyler's wind returned, rage swept over him. He blocked the punch. Kyler ducked beneath the punch and rained four quick punches on Logan's ribs. Logan turned and swept a gale through the air with a huge roundhouse. Kyler dropped beneath the blow and flicked a foot into Logan's pelvis.
Don't get up.
Logan got up on his hands and knees, obviously about to stand.
Logan!
Sarah rushed forward to Logan's side.
Well, Sarah, you always wanted us to spar. Looks like I win.
You aren't half the man Logan is.
Bitch.
Sarah knelt by Logan, and Kyler could see that he'd suddenly ceased to be part of her world. He straightened his tunic and cloak and pushed through the crowd. The first rows stepped back for him, as if even touching him would bring them shame. But as he pushed his way inside, people were still pushing outside, desperate to see the fight that they didn't know was already finished. Within a few feet of the door, he became just another noble in the crowd. He followed a wall to the servant's staircase, which was now unguarded, and went upstairs. Well, that hadn't exactly been a roaring success. It had cost him his reputation and had quite possibly revealed his presence to Hugh Gibbett. But it had gotten him up the stairs, and for now, that was all that mattered. He could worry about the consequences tomorrow. The rest of the job would be easier.
It has to be.
Hugh Gibbett had been tempted to head up the stairs as soon as the guards abandoned them to go break up some fool noble's fight. The unguarded stairs were a temptation, but he was confident of his skills. Besides, his plan would still work, and it would give him information he couldn't get if he walked upstairs now. Lady Jodwin was standing near the doors to the porch, either distraught or pretending to be. It was one of those little mysteries of life that the king had chosen her as his mistress. Surely, there were more attractive women who would sleep with a king, even this king. Lady Jodwin was living proof of the hazards of inbreeding. She was a tall woman with a horse's face, large enough and old enough that she certainly didn't belong in the dress she was wearing tonight, and known to be sexually voracious by everyone in the kingdom, except her husband. He figured that the distress was an act. Lady Jodwin was a passionate woman, but generally unflappable. This would probably be her excuse to go upstairs. There. She spoke briefly to one of her guards, then went back to apologizing to the guests streaming back in from outside, most of them disappointed at having missed the fun. The guard, having the subtlety of most guards, walked directly to the guard just now resuming his post at the servant's stair. He leaned close and whispered an order. Meanwhile, the Duchess waited until the prince came through the door. She spoke a few words to him, then began feigning more distress as he disengaged himself from a young blonde hanging on his arm. After a few more seconds, the Duchess excused herself, told her husband that she wasn't feeling well, turned down what must have been an offer to send someone with her, and went up the grand stair by herself. Doubtless, she told him she just needed to lie down for a little while. The prince was more circumspect, but not difficult to follow. He made his way to the sweetmeats, chatted with a few ladies politely, excused himself, and walked to the washroom, which was just down the hall from the servants' stair. He emerged from the dark hallway a minute later, looked quickly to see that no one was looking at him, and walked past the guard, who pretended not to see him. Hugh followed hard on the prince's heels, wrapping himself in shadows. The guard was so busy not seeing the prince, the wet boy probably could have slipped past him even without them. The servant's stair opened on the grand hallway by the Duke's chambers. The floors were the same white marble, with the middle of the hall covered by a red carpet for its entire length, all the way from this wing to the opposite one, where the Duchess's chambers were. The lights were dimmed as a visual redirection for the guests who might have been at past parties where both floors were open to guests. Kyler had no idea how long he had to get the globe of edges, but he was sure faster was better. It occurred to him that he wasn't the only person who might have seized the opportunity of the stairs being unguarded. Hugh Gibbett might already be upstairs. The only advantage Kyler had, he hoped, was that Hugh probably wasn't coming just for a smash and dash. He was probably coming to kill someone, If that had been Kyla's goal, the simplest way would be to wait until the Duchess gave the Kakari to the King's agent, whoever it was, and then kill both of them. That way, Hugh would get to satisfy his bloodlust, and he would kill the two people who knew for sure what had happened. The King wouldn't know if the jewel had been stolen or not, and would have no way to ask without publicly acknowledging that Lady Jodwyn was his mistress. If that guess was right, Kyla had until Lady Jodwyn came upstairs to get the globe of edges. It might be another hour, or it might be 2 minutes. Halfway down the hallway, a guard was walking toward him. Kyla stepped backward into the corner where the shadows were deeper, but then the guard turned and walked down the grand staircase. It was Kyla's chance. He walked forward quickly with no attempt at stealth. His chest tightened as he stepped past the one area of the hallway that was well lit. The landing at the top of the stairs was bathed in light, but with 6 steps, eyes locked straight forward, he made it across. The corridor was lined with disturbing sculptures and excellent paintings. Unless Kyla missed his guest, the Duke was something of an artist. The brilliant and diverse paintings were obviously selected by a man with a keen eye and a deep purse. Though similarly striking, the sculptures were unmistakably the product of one vision. Pain figures appeared to be tearing themselves from the rock. One stumbling woman looked over her shoulder with terror writ in every feature. A man raged at the cloud of black marble that enveloped his hands. A nude woman lay back erotically into the cloud, devouring her, rapture on her face. Even in the hurry Kyla was in, the sculpture stopped him in his tracks. It was beautiful, devastating. It mixed sensuality with something unsettling that Kyla couldn't identify. And it was unmistakably Aline.
So that's how it is.
Kyla felt as if something were tearing the lining of his stomach. It felt empty, raw.
Of course she sleeps with him. He's a duke. She's a servant, and it's hard to say no.
Even if she wanted to, maybe she didn't. It happens all the time. He looked at the statue closely, giving a cursory glance to the supple limbs, narrow waist, and high breasts, and found what he was looking for. Though he'd given her a perfect nose, with the lightest of scratches, the Duke had hinted at the scars on her face. So the man didn't just see them as imperfections. He was interested in the mysteries beneath.
Oh, this isn't the time for art appreciation, damn you.
With a lump in his throat, Kyla jogged down the hall on the balls of his feet. He grabbed the pouch from his back and had his picks out by the time he reached the door. No light or sound came from the room, so he picked the lock quickly. Kyla stepped inside and locked the door after himself. If Hugh came to the door, he'd have 3 seconds warning before the wet boy came. Kyla drew the bullock dagger he'd strapped to the small of his back. The blade was a foot long, and he'd prefer something 10 times its size if he had to fight Hugh, but it was the best he'd been able to smuggle in. He cased the room quickly. Most people, aware of the number of difficulties already present in a thief's life, were kind enough to use the same few hiding places. Kyla checked the mattress, behind the paintings, even the floor under the bureau, and several of the chairs for trap doors. Nothing. He checked the writing desk's drawers for false bottoms. Still nothing. Most people who kept items of great value wanted to be able to check on them without much hassle, so Kyla didn't even go into the enormous closet. Unless Duchess Jodwyn was comfortable handing her most prized possession to a servant, the globe would be somewhere easily reached. It didn't help that the Duchess seemed to be quite the collector. There were knick-knacks everywhere, and flowers, probably brought in for the Duke's homecoming, sprouted from every flat surface in the room, obscuring Kyla's view. So the Duke bought his wife some flowers, and from the musky smell in the air and the rumpled covers on the bed, apparently had been welcomed home enthusiastically. Then, one of the vases caught Kyla's eye. It was ornately carven jade, but more importantly, it had a square base. Kyla picked it up from the writing desk. Roses, spray roses, stargazer lilies, and snap serpents splayed every which way. Ignoring the flowers, He took it to the mantel and pushed aside a hardwood jewel box. There was an indentation in the stone of the mantelpiece, a square indentation. Kyla felt a surge of hope.
Oh, the prophet was right.
The base fit the indentation, and Kyla turned it. Kyla pulled all the knickknacks off the mantel and put them on the ground. On hidden hinges, the entire mantelpiece opened up. Ignoring the documents and gold bullion, Kyla grabbed the jewelry box. It was large. Large enough to hold the globe of edges.
Empty.
Gritting his teeth, Kyla replaced the case and closed the mantle. So, there was his lesson in prophecy.
A square vase will give you hope.
Dorian hadn't said it would turn out to be a false hope.
Damn.
Kyla paused long enough to fit a knockout needle into a small trap, just in case Hugh came in here instead of following the Duchess. Replacing the knickknacks and putting the vase back on the desk, Kyla tried to think.
Where could it be?
Everything that could have gone wrong tonight had. The only point of light was that he hadn't seen Aline.
Aline!
The leaden feeling in his stomach told Kyla that he knew exactly where the Kakari was. Prince felt hands grab him as soon as he stepped out of the staircase. An instant later, Lady Jodwin was pressing hot lips against his mouth. She pressed him back as he retreated until he bumped into the door of the Duke's chambers. He tried to hold her back, but she just reached past him and pulled the latch. Lady Jodwin closed the door behind herself and locked it.
My lady, stop, please!
Oh, yes, I'll stop when it pleases me. Or should I say, after you please me.
I told you we are finished if my father finds out.
Oh, bugger your father. He's as much of a bumbler out of bed as he is in it. He'll never know.
Your husband is just downstairs. Anyway, it doesn't matter, Trudana. You know what I'm here for.
If your father wants his globe back, he can come get it himself.
Lady Jodwin put her hand on the front of his breeches.
You know he couldn't come see you here. It'd be a slap in my mother's face.
He gave it to me. It was a present.
It's magic. My father thought it was just a stone. But Calidor demanded it. Why would they do that if they weren't... No!
The prince slapped her hand away as she tugged open the laces.
I know you like it.
I do like it, but we're finished. It was a mistake, and it will never happen again. Besides, Logan is waiting for me downstairs. I told him what I was doing.
Logan's your friend. He'll understand.
He's a great friend, but he sees things in black and white. Do you know how uncomfortable he was with me leaving him downstairs while I came upstairs with my father's mistress? I need to get the gem. Now.
Oh, fine.
Where is it? Your husband could come in any second.
My husband just came home today.
So?
So whatever else he is, the pig's faithful. So he's practically burning with passion whenever he gets back from a diplomatic assignment. He's recuperating downstairs. The poor dear, I think I exhausted him. I kept imagining it was you.
With what she must have imagined was a seductive look, Lady Jodwin shrugged her shoulders and the front of her dress fell open. She rubbed up against his body and tugged at the laces of his breeches again.
Trudana, please! Please keep that on! Where is it?
As I was saying, I knew you'd be here tonight, so I gave the globe to my maid. She's just two doors down. Are you satisfied?
Lady Jodwin hitched up her dress and walked to her dresser. She looked at herself in the mirror. The prince turned without saying anything. He'd thought this was going to be easy, that he was going to make his father owe him a huge favor for doing practically nothing. Now, he saw that Trudana Jodwin was going to be a lifelong enemy.
Never again. I will never sleep with a married woman again.
He didn't even want to look at Trudana. He wasn't even going to stay long enough to lace up his breeches. One second more was one second too many. His hand was on the latch when he heard the rapid shuffle of her feet. It felt like a wasp sting. Then Trudana's body crushed into him, and he felt the stinger sink deeper.
It wasn't a sting. It was too deep. There was something wrong with one of his lungs. He wasn't breathing right. He was being stabbed to death by a woman. It was embarrassing, really. He was the prince. He was one of the top swordsmen in the realm. And this fat-assed old woman with saggy, uneven breasts was killing him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. You don't know what he's like. I have to. I have to. I have to.
His vision was going dark, and his face slumped forward into the door. The last thing he saw, through the keyhole, was an eye on the opposite side of the keyhole, emotionlessly watching him die. He found the door with no problem. It was locked, but he picked it in seconds.
Let her be asleep, please.
Kyla found himself staring at an oversized meat cleaver. It was being held by Aline. She was very much awake. Slapping her hand with the flat of his bollock dagger, Kyla launched the knife out of her grip.
It's me! It's me!
Kyla had to twist this way and that to dodge flying elbows. He couldn't hold a hand over her mouth and pin both her arms and stop the kick she was aiming at his groin.
Be quiet, or your mistress dies!
As she seemed to regain her sanity, Kyla finally let Aline go.
I knew it! I knew I couldn't trust you! I knew it was just going to be you!
I meant your mistress will die because your noise will bring the wet boy here.
Oh.
Yes.
In the dim, moonlit room, he couldn't be sure, but Kyla thought he saw her blushing.
You could have knocked.
Sorry. Old habit.
Suddenly awake, she picked up the cleaver off the bed and put it under her pillow. Looking down at her nightgown, which was disappointingly chaste, she seemed embarrassed. She grabbed a robe and turned her back while she put it on.
Relax. It's a little late for modesty. I saw your statue. You look good naked.
I begged her not to display it, but she was so proud of it. She said I should be proud too.
She?
The Duchess.
The Duchess? Not the Duke. Not the Duke.
Kyla felt at once vastly relieved and more confused than ever.
Did you think I'd modeled naked for the Duke? What did you think? That I'm his mistress?
Well, it happens.
Not with me.
You mean you're a virgin?
Yes. Are you?
I would... Look, there's a killer here.
Two.
What?
Two killers.
She meant him. Kyla nodded, again feeling a lump in his throat, and suddenly he was ashamed of what he was.
Yes, too. I saw Hugh coming in, Aline. Is the globe safe?
He was watching her eyes. As expected, they darted to where she'd hidden it, the bottom of her closet.
Yes, it's on... You're going to steal it.
I'm sorry.
And now you know where I hid it. You set me up.
She was naive, but she wasn't stupid.
Yes.
Is there even an assassin? Or was it all a lie?
There is one. I give you my word.
For all that's worth.
I am sorry, Aline, but I have to.
Why?
It's hard to explain.
I spent all day being embarrassed about everything I'd ever written you. I spent all day feeling terrible how much you'd given for me. I didn't even tell the guards you were coming because I thought... You're a real piece of work, Kyla. I guess Azoth really did die.
I really do have to take it.
I can't let you do that.
Aline, if you stay here, they'll think you helped me. If Hugh doesn't kill you, the Jadwins might. They could throw you in the moor. Aline, come with me. I couldn't live with myself if they did that.
You'll manage. Just take a new name. Throw money at whatever makes you feel guilty.
They'll kill you.
I won't repay good with evil.
He was running out of time. He had to get out of here. So everything was going to go the worst possible way tonight.
Then I'm sorry for this, but it's to save you.
What is?
Kyla's first punch was in the mouth, hard enough to draw blood.
and the other was in her beautiful, piercing eyes, hard enough that they would be blackened and swell shut, so they wouldn't see what he did. As she staggered backward, he spun her around and clamped her in a chokehold. In seconds, she was unconscious.
Oh, she'll never forgive me for this. I'll never forgive me for this.
Kyla laid her on the floor and pulled out a knife. He cut his hand and dripped blood onto Aline's face to make it look like she'd been beaten. It was gross, and the contrast of her beauty with the ugliness of what he was doing made him uncharacteristically squeamish. But it had to be done. She had to look like a victim. Looking at her there, unconscious, was like eating his own little slice of the bitter business. The bitterness of the business was the truth of the business. Even here, when he hadn't killed, when he didn't have to bathe in the all-permeating odors of death, Kyler had closed the eyes that saw the truth of him, blackened the eyes of light that illuminated the darkness in him, had bloodied and blinded the eyes that pierced him.
Who says there are no poets in the bitter business?
The silver Kakari was tucked in a slipper in the bottom of the closet. Kyler held it up to examine it in the moonlight. It was a plain metallic sphere, utterly featureless. In truth, it was a little disappointing. Despite the metallic sheen, it was translucent, which was novel. Kyler had never seen anything like that, but he'd been hoping the Kakari would do something spectacular. He tucked the ball into a pouch and moved to the door.
So far, so good.
Well, actually, so far tonight had been pretty much an unmitigated disaster. But getting out should be relatively easy. If he couldn't sneak past the guard at the bottom of the servant's stairs, he could walk right up to the man and pretend that he'd been looking for the toilet and had needed to go so badly that he'd gone for the first available one. The guard would give him a warning that the upstairs was off limits. Kyler would say they should have guards at the bottom of the steps if they didn't want anyone to go up them. The guard would be chagrined, and Kyler would go home. Not foolproof. But then, tonight, Kyler would have distrusted anything that was foolproof. Looking through the keyhole, he watched the hallway and listened closely for 30 seconds. There was nothing out there. Suddenly, the door blew into him. He almost kept his feet, but as he flew back, he tripped over Aline's unconscious body. Barely holding onto consciousness, black spots exploding in front of his eyes, Kyler must have drawn the pair of daggers on pure instinct, because his hands protested in pain as the daggers were knocked out of them.
Boy!
Kyler had to blink several times before he could see again. When his vision cleared, the first thing he saw was the knife point an inch from his eye. He followed that of the gray-clad arm and hooded body.
I wonder why I'm not dead.
But even before Hugh pulled back his hood, Kyler knew Mama Kay had betrayed them. She'd sent him to kill the wrong man.
Master Blint?
What are you doing?
Blint stood, furious, the illusory features of Hugh Gibbett melting away like smoke. Kyler staggered to his feet, his head still spinning and his ears ringing.
I had to. You were gone.
Gone planning this? Oh, never mind now. We've got 3 minutes until the guard's next round.
Blint nudged Aline's limp form with a toe.
That one's still alive. Kill her. Then go find the Kakari while I fix the deader. We'll discuss your punishment later.
You killed the Duchess.
The deader was the prince. Someone else got there first.
Durzo unsheathed retribution and checked the hallway. Kyler looked at the unconscious girl. Her innocence was irrelevant. Even if he didn't kill her, they'd think she'd help steal the Kakari and kill the prince.
Kyler!
Kyler looked up, dazed. It was all like a bad dream. It couldn't be happening.
I already...
Kyler held out the pouch limply, scowling. Durzo snatched it away from him and turned it over. The globe of edges fell into his hand.
Damn, just what I thought.
What?
But Durzo wasn't in any mood to answer questions.
Did the girl see your face?
Kyler's silence was enough.
Take care of it. Kyler, that's not a request, it's an order. Kill her.
Thick white scars crisscrossed what had once been a beautiful face. Her eyes were swelling, blackening. And that was as much Kyler's fault as the 10-year-old scars were.
Love is a noose.
No.
What did you say?
Bo black blood dribbled down Retribution, pooling on the floor. There was still time to stop, time to obey and live. But if he let Deline die, Kyla would be lost in shadow forever.
I won't kill her, and I won't let you. I'm sorry, Master.
Do you have any idea what that means? Who is this girl that she's worth being hunted for the rest of your short? She's Dollgirl.
Yes, Master. I'm sorry.
By the Night Angels. I don't want apologies. I want obedience.
Durzo held up a finger for silence. The footfalls were close now. Durzo threw open the door and blurred into the hall inhumanly fast. Retribution flashing silver in the low light. It was Stumpy, the older guard who'd frisked Kyla so gingerly when he'd cased the estate this morning. The hall lantern behind Durzo swaddled darkness's favorite child in shadow, casting his form over Kyler and making his face invisible. Silhouetted, black blood dripped from the tip of Retribution.
Kyler, this is your last chance.
Yes.
Kyler turned to face the man who'd raised him, who'd been more than a father to him.
It is.
Suddenly, the Kakari flew to Kyler. He raised a hand and felt the Kakari slap into his outstretched palm. He turned his hand over and saw the Kakari burning a brilliant incandescent blue. It was stuck to his palm. As he looked, runes began burning on the surface of the globe. They shifted, changing, as if trying to speak to him. Blue light bathed his face and he could see through the Kakari. Was sucking blood from the cut in his palm. He looked up and saw dismay on Master Blint's face.
No! No, it's mine!
The Kakari pooled like black oil in an instant. Blue light exploded like a supernova. Then the pain came. Cold in Kyler's hand became pressure. It felt like his hand was splitting apart. Staring at the now uniformly burning puddle in his hand with horror, Kyler saw that it was shrinking. It was pushing itself into his hand. Kyler felt the Kakari enter his blood. Every vein bulged and contorted, freezing as the Kakari passed through him. Didn't know how long it lasted. He sweated and shivered and sweated coldly. Gradually, the cold faded from his limbs. More gradually still, warmth replaced it. Perhaps seconds, perhaps half an hour later, Kyler found himself on the floor. Oddly, he felt good. Even face down on stone, he felt good. Complete. Like a gap had been bridged, a hole had been filled.
I'm a Kakarifa. I was born for this.
Then he remembered. He looked up. From the look of frozen horror on Durzo's face, it all must have taken only seconds. Kylo jumped to his feet, feeling stronger, healthier, more full of energy than he could ever remember. The look on Durzo's face wasn't anger. It was grief. Bereavement. Kyler slowly turned his hand over. The skin was still cut in his palm, but it wasn't bleeding anymore. The Kakari had seemed to push into...
No, it couldn't have.
From every pore in his hand, black poured out like sweat. It congealed. In a moment, the Kakari rested in his palm. A strange glee filled Kyler. Fear followed. He wasn't sure the glee was all his own. It was as if the Kakari were happy to have found him. He looked back to Durzo feeling stupid, so far out of his depth he didn't know how to act. It was then he realized how clearly he could see Durzo's face. The man still stood in the hallway, the lantern behind him. A moment before the Kakari, his face had been all but invisible. Kyla could still see the shadows falling on the floor where Durzo blocked the light, but he could see through them. It was like looking through glass. You could tell the glass was there, but it didn't impede your vision. Kyla glanced around Aline's little room and saw that the same applied to everything he looked at. The darkness welcomed his eyes now. His eyes were sharper, clearer. He could see further, could see the castle across the river as if it were high noon.
I have to have the Kakari. If he doesn't get it, he'll kill my daughter. Night angels, have mercy. Kyla, what have you done?
I didn't do anything.
Kyla held the Kakari out.
Take it. You can have it. Get your daughter back.
Jezzel took it from him. He stared into Kyla's eyes.
You bonded it. It bonds for life, Kyla. Your talent will work now, whether you're holding it or not. But its other powers won't work for anyone else until you're dead.
Kyla had to go now. The import of Durzo's words was barely beginning to register. Durzo turned to face whoever was coming up the steps, and the prophet's words echoed in Kyla's ears.
If you don't kill Durzo Blint tomorrow, Kalidor will take Cenaria. If you don't kill him the day after that, everyone you love will die. If you do the right thing once, it will cost you years of guilt. If you do the right thing twice, it will cost you your life.
The Bollock dagger was in his hand. Durzo's back was turned. Kyla could end it now. Not even Durzo's reflexes could stop him when Kyla was this close. It would mean stopping an invasion, saving everyone he loved. Surely that meant he held Aline's life in his hands right now. Logan's, maybe the Drake's, maybe the whole invasion hinged on this. Maybe hundreds or thousands of lives were balanced now on the point of his dagger. A quick, painless cut and Durzo would die. Hadn't he said that life was empty, worthless, meaningless, cheap? He wouldn't be losing anything of value when he lost his life. He'd sworn that. Durzo had said it, and more. But Kyler had never really believed him. Mama Kay had already stabbed Durzo in the back with her lies. Kyler couldn't do it with his hands. The moment took on a startling clarity. It froze like a diamond and rotated before his eyes, every facet gleaming, future shearing off and sparkling. Kyler looked for Aline on his right hand, to Durzo on his left, from Durzo to Aline, Aline to Durzo. There was his choice, and their futures. He could kill Aline, the woman he loved, or he could kill Durzo, who had raised him as his son. In every facet, this truth glared pitilessly. If one lived, the other must die.
No, Master. Do it. Kill me.
Durzo looked at him as if he couldn't believe his ears.
She's only seen me. She won't be a threat to anyone if I'm dead. You can take the Kakari and save your daughter.
Blint's eyes filled with a look Kyler had never seen before. The hard, jagged cast of his master's face seemed to ease, and it made him seem a different man. Not old and tired and worn, but younger. A man more like Kyler than Kyler had ever imagined Blint could look. Durzo blinked as bottomless wells of grief threatened to spill over in tears. He shook his head.
Just go, son.
Kyler wanted to go. He wanted to run away, but he was right. It was the only way. He stood there, frozen, but not with indecision. He was just praying that Durzo would act before he lost his courage. The door to the Duke's chambers opened and the blood-spattered Duchess stumbled out.
Assassin! He's killed the prince!
Durzo acted instantly. He slammed into Kyler, driving them both into Aline's room. It took all of Kyler's presence of mind to not trample Aline, but Durzo was still moving. He had a hold of Kyler's cloak and was swinging him with the surprising speed and force of his talent. By the grace of God, or his cruelty, or sheer dumb luck, or Durzo's preternatural skills, Kyla landed squarely in the center of a hedge. It was ridiculous. Nothing was broken, nothing sprained. Kyla didn't even get scratched. He looked up and saw guests craning their heads on the balcony where so recently he'd kissed Sarah. But they were on the other side of lamps and couldn't make him out.
Assassin! The prince has been murdered! God to arms!
Suddenly, armed men were running everywhere. Kylo looked up at the second story with his heart in his throat. He hadn't known whether to curse or laugh. The decision was out of his hands for now. He was alive, and it felt good. There was nothing else to do. Kylo jogged to the estate's guarded gate, broke the lock, and disappeared into the night. The God King, Garath Orsul, was awake before the functionary knocked on his bedchamber door. No one could approach this room without waking him. It meant less sleep than he might like, but he was an old man now. He didn't need much sleep. Besides, it kept the slaves on their toes. The room wasn't what one might expect of a God King. It was open, light, and airy. Filled with beautiful Planga-stained glass and ivory mirrors and seti lace on the bed and dire bear rugs from the frieze on the floors and freshly cut flowers on the desk and the mantel, all chosen and arranged by a slave with aesthetic sensibilities. Garath cared for none of it but the paintings. Portraits of his wives lined the walls. His wives had come from almost every nation in Mid-Kiru, and with few exceptions, all were beautiful. Petite or willowy, buxom or boyish, pale or dark, the images all pleased Garath Orsul. He was a connoisseur of feminine beauty, and he spared no expense in indulging his vice. It was, after all, a service to his family and the world that he breed the best sons possible. That was where the unattractive women came in. He'd experimented with kidnapping women from royal families in hopes that they might produce more acceptable sons. Two of his current 9 Aethlings had been born of such women, so Garath supposed that nobles might produce acceptable sons at a slightly better rate than the rabble. But it was ever so much more tedious to breed with an ugly woman. Partly for his son's sake, and partly for his own amusement, he'd even indulged in making some of the women love him. It had been surprisingly easy. He hadn't had to lie as much as he'd expected. Women were so willing to do that to themselves. He'd heard that love made the sex better, but he wasn't impressed. With magic, he could make a woman's body respond to him however he pleased. And there was a joy in watching a woman try to hold her fury and hatred while his magic pleased her in ways she'd never felt before. Unfortunately, such pleasures did have their price. Those wives had to be watched closely. He'd lost 2 to suicide. Garath gestured the door open. The functionary came in on his knees, scooting forward, crossing his arms on his chest.
My God! My majestic king!
Garath sat up.
Out with it. You have a message from the Jodwin slot.
She reports that she has killed the prince, but has lost possession of the Kakari. So sorry, your holiness.
Doubtless it's another counterfeit. Have the ships arrived from the Modaini invasion?
Scenaria he could deal with whenever he pleased, but a straight march south would tie up his armies for weeks or months. That damned Duke Geyer had turned the defenses at Screaming Winds into a serious obstacle. He could take it, of course. He could probably defeat any army in the world now, except the Alatarans. But a God King didn't waste men or meisters on frontal assaults, not when he had other options. Besides, what conqueror would really want a hive like Scenaria anyway? He'd almost do better to exterminate everyone there and send his own subjects to colonize the city. Garath Orsul's interest wasn't in temporal power. The bid for Scenaria was just an amusement. He had far more reliable intelligence that the Red Kakari was in Modai. Once there, he would have Scenaria surrounded. He could probably take the country without even fighting for it. Thankara, and a strike right into the mage's heart, Shokendi. He wouldn't have to face Alatera until he was sure of victory.
2 ships are still passing through Cenarian waters.
Good. Then we will...
Your Holiness.
Hopper.
Yes, Your Holiness.
Don't ever interrupt me again.
Hopper nodded wide-eyed.
Now, what do you have to say?
Lady Jadwin claims to have seen someone bond the Kakari in the hallway outside her room. Her description was accurate.
By Kali's blood.
A Kakari, after all this time. A Kakari someone had bonded. That almost made it easier. A Kakari alone was small enough. It could be hidden or lost anywhere. But a Kakari that was bonded would be kept close by whomever bonded it.
Reroute those ships and order Roth to go ahead with the assassinations. The Gyres, the Shinga, all of them. Tell Roth he's got 24 hours.
Something was terribly wrong. Regnus Gyre knew that as soon as he reached the gates of his home. No guards were standing outside. Even with how many of his servants and guards the king had managed to have fired or driven off in the last decade, that was disturbing. The lamps were still burning inside the manse, which was odd, an hour past midnight.
Should I call out, my lord?
No.
Regnus dismounted and looked through his saddlebags until he found the key. He opened the gate and drew his sword. On either side of the gate, out of the lamplight, was a body. Each had his throat cut.
No. No! No!
He burst through the front door and saw red everywhere. At first, his mind refused to accept it. In every room, he found the dead. All looked like they had been caught unawares. Nothing was broken. There were no sounds of violent conflict at all, except the bodies. Not even the guards had fought. Almost everyone had had his throat slashed. Then the bodies had been turned so they would bleed as much as possible. Here, old Dunnell was seated upside down in a chair. There, Marianne, who had been Logan's wet nurse, was laid down the stairs with her head on the bottom step. It was as if Death himself had strolled through the house and no one had even tried to stop him. Everywhere Regnus saw trusted servants, friends, dead. He found himself running up the stairs past the statue of the Grasp Twins toward Katrina's room. In the hall, he saw the first signs of a struggle. An errant sword had smashed a display case. A portrait of his grandfather had a chunk of frame missing. The guards here had died fighting, the killing wounds on their chests or faces. But the winner was clear, because each body had had its throat cut and its legs propped up on the walls. The puddles from a dozen men met, coating the floor as if it were a lake of blood. Gooden knelt, his fingers touching a friend's neck.
They're still warm.
Regnus kicked open the door of his room. Four men and two women were there, stripped, lying face down in an open circle. Above them, naked, hanging upside down from one foot, tied to the chandelier high above, while the other leg flopped grotesquely, was Katrina. Cut into the backs of the corpses, one word each, were the words, "Love and kisses, Hugh Gibbet." The knife standing straight out of his Stuart Wendell North's back served as the period. Regnus ran. He ran from the room, checking the dead, turning them over to look at their faces. He became dimly aware of Gurdon, shaking him.
Sir, he's not here. Logan's not here. We have to leave. Come with me.
He let Gurdon drag him outside, and the smell of air without blood in it was sweet.
Oh my God!
Gurdon paid no attention to Regnus, just pulling him along, stumbling. They got to the front door just as six of the king's elite lancers rode up to it, with lances leveled.
Hold!
The lieutenant's men fanned out around Regnus and Gurdon.
Hold! Are you Regnus Gyre?
Something about the bared steel and the sound of his own name wakened him.
Yes. Yes, I am he.
Lord Gyre, I've been ordered to arrest you. I'm sorry, sir.
Arrest me?
Yes, my lord. For the murder of Katrina Gyre.
A wave of cold washed through Regnus. He could brace, or he could break. He clenched his jaw, and the tears that sprang from his eyes seemed oddly out of place with the command in his voice.
When did you get your orders, son?
An hour ago, sir.
She hasn't been dead 15 minutes. So tell me, what does that say about your orders?
The lieutenant's face blanched. A moment later, the lances were wavering.
Our captain said you'd been seen killing... doing it, sir. An hour ago he said that.
The lieutenant looked at Gurdon.
Is it true?
Go see for yourself.
The lieutenant went inside, leaving the men nervously guarding them. Some of the men peeked through the windows and quickly looked away. Regnus felt impatient, as though if he were given the time, he might think again, might detach from his mind. Tears were running down his cheeks again, and he didn't know why. He had to think. He could find out the captain's name, but the man was also just obeying orders, whether from the Sakage or the king. Several minutes later, the lieutenant emerged. He had vomit on his beard and was shaking violently.
You may go, Lord Gaia. And I'm sorry. Let him go.
The men withdrew when Regnus mounted, but he didn't leave.
Will you serve the men who massacred my whole family? I intend to find my son, and I intend to find who... Come with me, and I swear you will serve with honor.
We're with you, sir.
The men nodded, and Regnus had his first squad.
My lord, I cut her down, sir. I couldn't leave her like that.
Regnus couldn't speak. He sawed at his reins viciously and galloped for the gates.
Why didn't I do that? She was my wife. What kind of man am I?
Lord General Agon was one of the few nobles who hadn't been at the Jadwin's party last night. He hadn't been invited. Not that he felt left out. The sun was just creeping over the horizon, and the situation didn't look any better in the light of day. Usually, of course, the city guard would handle a murder. But usually, the victims of murder weren't heirs to the throne. Agon needed to oversee this one personally.
Why don't you tell me what really happened, m'lady?
Lady Jadwin was genuinely distraught. Agon was sure of that. What he wasn't sure of was whether it was because she had been caught or because she was sorry the prince was dead.
I have told you. A wet boy.
How do you know what a wet boy is, Trudonna?
Why are you trying to confuse me? I'm telling you, an assassin was here, standing in this hallway. Do you think I beheaded my own guard? Do you think I'm strong enough for that? Why won't you listen to Aline? She'll tell you.
Agon had thought about that. Not only did he doubt that Lady Jadwin was strong enough to behead a man, but she had no weapon to do it with. And if she just murdered the prince without saying a word, why would she cry out and draw people upstairs before she had a chance to clean the blood off her hands and face?
Explain this.
Agon lifted the red dress she'd worn the night before. His men had discovered it wadded up in the closet. It was still damp with hardening blood. A lot of blood.
After the assassin stabbed the prince, he fell and I caught him. He died in my arms. I tried to go get help, but the assassin was still in the hall. I was terrified. I panicked. I couldn't stand to have his blood all over me.
What were the two of you doing alone in the bedchamber?
How dare you!
How dare you, Trudonna? How dare you cheat on your husband, not just with the king, but also with the king's son? What kind of perverse pleasure did you take out of that? Did you like making the prince betray his father?
Lady Jadwin tried to slap him, but he moved.
You can't slap everyone in the kingdom, Trudonna. We found the bloody knife in your room. Your servants vouch that it's yours. I'd say the odds are that you're going to be beheaded. Unless, that is, the king decides you deserve a common traitor's death on the wheel.
At those words, Trudonna Jadwin paled and turned green. But she didn't say another word. Agon gestured angrily, and his men took her away.
That was unworthy of you.
Agon turned and saw Aline Cromwell, the Jadwin's maidservant who'd been found beaten up and unconscious in her room. She was curvaceous, pretty, except for the scars and bruises on her face. But Lady Jadwin fancied herself an artist, so she liked to surround herself with pretty things.
Yes, I suppose it was. But seeing what she's done, what a waste.
My mistress has made many poor choices. She's hurt many people, destroyed marriages, but she isn't a murderer, Lord General. My lord, I know what happened here last night.
Really? Sorry. This has been a difficult night. Anywhere you can help would be welcome.
I know who killed the prince. He's a wet boy masquerading as a lord. I knew what he was, and I knew he was coming, but I didn't think he'd hurt anybody. His name is Kyla. Kyla Stern.
Look, young lady, your loyalty to your mistress is admirable, but you don't need to do this. If you hold to that story, you'll go to jail. At the least, if you're found to be an accomplice, or even an unwitting accessory to the murder of the prince, you may be hanged. Are you sure you want to do that just to save Trudana Jadwin?
It isn't for her.
Then it's for this Kyler Stern. He was the young man who had the fight with Logan Geyer. You must hate him fiercely.
She just looked away. In the rising sunlight, the tears on her cheeks glowed like jewels.
No, sir. Not at all.
Lord General!
A soldier stood in the doorway. He looked shaken.
I just came from the Geyer estate, sir. It's chaos there. There are hundreds of people going through the house, wailing, sir. They're dead, sir.
What do you mean, dead? You mean murdered?
More like butchered, sir.
Who's been murdered, soldier?
Sir, all of them.